off for God, Don, Don.
What is this man saying?
Buenas, señor Duncan. Friends, you see love.
What is this man doing?
What in the hell's the matter with you?
What is this man's name?
My name is Igor Stravinsky.
Hi there, I'm Harry S. Truman.
I'm Don Corleone.
They call him Fletch.
Fletch! Fletch!
Fletch F. Fletch.
He's good at defending himself.
You better tie your shoelaces.
Oh!
Disguising himself. And getting himself into trouble.
Well, it be Fletch.
Go ahead. Make my day.
He's a reporter.
There are no tags on these mattresses.
Who's about to write the story of a lifetime.
Will you kill me?
Sure.
If he lives.
Thanks a lot!
There isn't a woman he can't charm.
Can I borrow your towel for a sec? My car just hit a water buffalo.
A question he won't ask.
You and your wife are currently alive, I take it.
Drop your shorts and bend over, Mr. Babar.
A risk he won't take.
Probably feel 100% Moon River.
To get to the truth.
Well, looks like you two have a lot to talk over. We'll just catch the last 10 minutes of Dynasty.
Universal Pictures presents Chevy Chase as Fletch.
My hero.
Nothing to it.
Hello and welcome to the Film and Water Podcast, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and joining me this week to talk about Chevy Chase's immortal 1985 comedy, Fletch, is John Cocktoastone.
That's Babar.
Is that two B's or one B?
One B, B-A-B-A-Bar.
But that's two.
But not together, not together.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah. All right, so, yeah, everybody, if you're listening, if you hate two people just quoting Fletch lines back and forth to one another, you're probably not going to like this episode. This one got started, of all places, at the hotel room at Heroes Con because, of course, we heard the news that Stephen First, who played Flounder.
Kent Dorfman.
That, of course, Stephen First passed away. And so Ryan and I just started going back and forth on Animal House lines. And then at some point, we kind of hopscotched over to Fletch. I don't know exactly how we did that, but we did.
I think it was the Tim Matheson connection.
Because I mentioned
the only things that he's stuck in my mind for are Animal House, Fletch, and West.
Oh, that's it. There you go. Okay, right. So, yeah, so then we hopped over to Fletch, and we were just annoying everybody else in the room because we were just doing Fletch lines back and forth. So, my overarching thought about Fletch, Ryan, is like, you know, we've all heard this thing lately about, you know, we don't make movies for critics. We make movies for fans. And that's horseshit. You know, I think that's a total nonsense because critics want to like movies. You know, they don't want to bash something. So I always find that to be a weak excuse. That said, I think Fletch is one of those movies that a film critic just has a tough time appreciating because all the criticism I've ever seen lodged at Fletch is the reason why everybody likes it. Is that Chevy Chase floats above this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like Roger Ebert, who I used to love reading, and I still do occasionally, if I go back and read some of his older books, he's like, Fletch doesn't work because Chevy Chase just doesn't commit to this material. His character just sort of, again, floats above the story, and he doesn't connect with the material. And it's like, that is exactly why everyone I know that likes Fletch, is because he is what we would want to do. He's the guy who just doesn't give a shit about what's going on, which isn't a very powerful thing to see when you're like a teenager.
Well, yeah, he is the only thing that kind of separates this movie from an average Chandler Dashiell Hammett-esque like crime noir type of story. It's if we're gonna boil down the plot, it's basically for lack of a private investigator, it's a reporter, an anonymous or a mysterious reporter guy, a journalist who goes undercover, is solicited to murder somebody who claims that he's dying of cancer, wants to be murdered so that his wife and his family can be taken care of and get the insurance. The more that the reporter Fletch like investigates this guy and looks into it because he's a curious type by nature, the more he finds out that the story is crap, the story is bullshit, and he's being set up to take the fall for something. And it opens up this greater conspiracy about drug trafficking and the police are involved. And it's a pretty, like, if you took that, if you changed his character to basically a normal Sam Spade type of detective character, you get a very by-the-numbers mystery story. And it would be fine for that. But what makes this movie different is everything you just said. Chevy Chase is not in the same world. He is operating on a different wavelength that's somewhat, I mean, he does break the fourth wall. He does narrate it. So he's talking to the audience and he's kind of winking to the audience at times. He's what makes this a little bit different, a little bit off center. And that's the whole point of watching it.
Right. I mean, the opening scenes on the beach where he's pretending to be a junkie, yeah. He's talking to George Wendt, which is funny to see George Wendt kind of in a dramatic performance, right? Because this was like right in the heart of when he was doing Cheers.
And he's still he's still sitting.
Yeah, he's basically Norm. Moving. Norm as a drug addict. Basically.
He's Norm on a beach.
Norm on a beach. But I mean, the whole bit about, you know, do you have anything? No, I don't have anything. Well, I have some Reds. You don't mean communists, do
communist,
you understand? Like, this is like right there. You're like, okay, Fletch just does not take any of this stuff seriously. And I've read the Fletch books. Mm-hmm. The nine that Gregory MacDonald wrote, and they certainly hint towards this character, but not to the level of what Chevy would do with it, you know. Mm-hmm. And apparently, this is Chevy Chase's favorite film of all his films, which I understand because he just gets to kind of do whatever he wants. I mean, every scene that he meets these characters on, and like you talked about, everyone else is playing in a very straightforward movie. This movie is directed by Michael Ritchie, who was a fairly journeyman director in the 70s and 80s. He did the Bad News Bears and Wildcats, but he also did in the 70s The Candidate and Smile. Okay. So he was capable of kind of being an artiste, but here he kind of just lets Chevy go. He just lets Chevy just say random stuff. And I mean, the whole idea of like Chevy's giving people names that like are vaguely familiar to some people, but like just enough, like where you say, you know, he introduces himself as G. Gordon Liddy at one point. He says he's Harry S. Truman. You know, I mean, it's like he goes to, and it's like, I mean, the one where he talks to Alan Stanwyck's parents, Tim Matheson, where he says Harry S. Truman. That's the one where the guy's like, Harry S. Truman. And he has that backstory. Yes. Well, my parents were big fans of the former president, you know? Yeah. It's like, okay. And you know, it's like, I saw this movie when I was a teenager. I was probably 13, 14. And Fletch is, like, of a piece with Venkman, you know, where it's that same guy where it's like he's the perfect smartass that you want to be when you're 13 or 14. You want to go through life just being completely disregarding of everybody's, you know, what they care about. You're just like, hey, whatever. And then, of course, he's a hit with the ladies. Because he's got Gina Davis waiting for him back at the office, which is fantastic. She's wonderful in this movie. And yes, then, of course, he charms Gail Stanwyck, the wife of Alan Stanwyck, who gets involved, is played by Dana Wheeler Nicholson. She's somebody who I have like not seen in any other movies other than this one. But she's great. She's got a really great rapport with Chevy. And I like that she like laughs at some of his jokes. Like, she finds Fletch funny.
He does have that, you know, that smart ass charm that you get away with. And going back to what you're saying, like with the criticism, I understand that because he is so much of a smart ass and he doesn't take it seriously, that if you try to apply any real scrutiny or logic to this movie, this guy Fletch could never go undercover. He would never succeed in these things. Nobody would believe it because he's so like non-committal about everything that it's like, no, you're nobody, like anybody who questions this guy is going to catch him in the lie and he'll be in trouble. Like, this wouldn't work. So the character shouldn't work, but it does if you just accept the premise that, yeah, this, and that's why I said he is the whole reason this movie is worth watching. You just have to accept that it is a little bit different and it's a little bit, you know, it's almost farcical. But you're right. Yeah, when he just, like, the way he picks her up and everything, and just the whole thing, like, you could just watch the scene at the clubhouse that first, like, when he
– oh, man, that scene with the tennis – with the tennis machine and all that stuff. Oh, my God, fantastic.
And he's like he just gets her, he like practices her swing just so that they can go up and like she can improve or whatever. And at that point, like the balls run out, and he's like, "All right, well, good workout."
Yeah, you get rid of it better already. Yeah, yeah. I met you at the wedding. I don't remember being at your wedding. No, your wedding, my wedding. Nope, still don't remember.
Still don't.
Yeah, what is your name? That's when he says the John Cock.
John Cocktoast. What is she? It's like that's a hell of a. It's like, well,
that's a hell of a combination. Well, so are my parents. Scott Germanian. That's a hell of a combination. Also, are my parents. Yeah, he's always got and again, that's the scene where you totally get on Fletch's side because that's where he screws over Ted Underhill,
yes.
Who is the guy who is so mean to the wait staff at the,
you're probably expecting a nice big tip right here. Yeah. And he just folds the bill in half. He's like, maybe next time.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, God, you want to screw this guy over.
Yeah.
So.
I love that. And then and when the guy, when he said, when he says, put it on the Underhills tab, and he's like, yeah, yeah. And he says, Mr. Underhill's no longer here, sir. Oh, he'll be back. He just went out for his urinalysis.
Urinalysis. I'll have a Bloody Mary and a steak sandwich and a steak sandwich.
I'll take the beluga caviar. It is $80 a portion, sir. Well, I better have two portions then.
And then later when he goes to see the attorney, he's like, what kind of name is Poon anyway? Comanche Indian.
Comanche Indian, yeah. It's like, what the hell? And, like, I love how people ignore some of the stuff he says, because, like, when he poses as the doctor to get the medical records. First of all, he's doing the whole bit with the Dr. Rosen. Dr. Rosenfeld. Like, what is your name? Dr. Rosenfeld. What is it? It's Dr. Rosen. Rosenfeld. And then when he, you know, he ends up getting involved in the autopsy, and then he faints, and when he wakes up, and he says to the nurse, you know, she's like, we were very surprised that you fainted. I mean, you were surprised.
I thought that dead body was my dead brother.
My dead brother. And she goes, oh, my God. He says, that spleen is the spitting image. And then she's like, can I get you anything? And he says, nothing. I'll just take a glass of hot fat and bring me the head of Alfredo Garcia while you're at it. And the woman just ignores it. Like, she's, in real life, that person was like, what are you talking about? What is the matter with you? But people just move on. You know, move on to the next thing. It's just like,
but it's lines like that I think, like, how much of this script was ad-libbed by Chevy? Like how much of this dialogue was written and how much of it was just him just riffing? Because, like, who writes a line like that?
Yeah,
like,
bring me the head of Alfredo Garcia. And when he goes into the whole plot about, you know, where he pretends to be one of the Godfather brothers. Like, you know, he's like, my sons Michael and Fredo are taking over. And he's just like this whole riff on the Godfather. And when he meets the security guy, you know, where he's like, you guys got the shotgun. He's like, she moved out. So you're saying she moved out.
She moved out. Yeah. It's, oh, man. Like, all the scenes. Oh, yeah. She's like, who are you again? I'm Frida's boss. Who's Frida? My secretary.
My secretary. And he grabs the note and walks out. Like, yeah. And the woman just shakes her head at that and then just goes right back to her work. You know? Like, she's like, okay, whatever. Yeah. It's just fine. Yeah, yeah.
Again, like, when you're a teenager, when you're watching the movie for the first time, it's that level of confidence. It's just like, sure, you just say stuff like that and just walk on by and people ignore you. Nobody's, because people are non-confrontational. They're not going to, like, call you on it. So.
Right. And I think part of the other reason this works as well as it does is that Michael Ritchie did staff it with, like, genuine, really decent supporting actors. I mean, you've got Joe Don Baker as Chief Carlin, Mitchell himself. You've got Joe Don Baker, who's great, because, I mean, he's always, like, such a scary heavy. As I mentioned, Dana Wheeler Nicholson as Gail Stanwyck. Fun fact for you nerds out there, Dana Wheeler Nicholson, the granddaughter of Major Malcolm Wheeler Nicholson, the guy that founded DC Comics in the early 30s. What a weird little detail that is. I remember being a kid and I saw that name and I knew who Major Wheeler Nicholson was. And I said, her name is Dana Wheeler. Like, that, she's got to be related. How many Wheeler Nicholsons are there out there? So, and you got Richard Libertini as his boss at the paper, who he never tires of insulting. Which is fantastic, because, again, who doesn't want to do that to their boss? He just gets to constantly insult. You know, he's like, where are you going? I got to go to Utah. Utah? Yeah, you know, it's between Wyoming and Wisconsin. You've seen pictures, you know? It's constantly going on. And we mentioned Tim Matheson, who, of course, as you mentioned, played Otter in Animal House, a role that was originally written for Chevy Chase. So there's that. Emmett Walsh as the doctor, who's fantastic. That whole run about... where he's talking about the guy that died, and he's like, you know, he died very suddenly. Oh, he was dying for years.
Yeah, no, but the end was the end.
He died very suddenly. He was in intensive care for 8 weeks. No, I mean, at the very end. He was very sudden.
And then, of course, having, like, the whole rectal exam, proctology exam and everything, it just, it's like, Moon River.
Did you ever serve time, Doc?
It's like, you using the whole fist up there, Doc?
Didn't you hear him? Just relax.
Yeah, just relax, he says.
George Wendt as Fat Sam, as we mentioned. Kenneth Mars, the great Kenneth Mars from Young Frankenstein, is the guy that does the whole real estate bit, which is funny. Kenneth Mars doesn't get anything funny to do, but there's just something, I don't know, it's entertaining that you get somebody, a ringer like that, to play such a tiny part, you know?
Yeah.
And it's Gina Davis as Larry. George
I love your body, Larry.
I love your body, Larry. George Weiner is his wife's divorce attorney. That great character actor. I love that whole bit about, you know, where he draws the foul and he's going on and on about, and he's like, I think my wife is cheating on me. I think you might be right. He's like, are you kidding? He's like, that's ancient history, Fletch. And then he gives him $1,000 and he's like, ooh, cash. I saw my pimp today.
And who the realtor, the guy, I can never think of the guy's name. He was in Deadwood. He was Bob Newhart's show.
Oh yeah, he was one. He was Larry from Larry.
Yeah,
Darryl,
Larry Daryl Daryl. Yeah. Liam Sanderson. Yeah, yeah, he does great in just like his small little bit part. Again, doesn't have anything really like memorable or like funny to say, but he just does. He's got that great voice. But
he's the one that owns the dog that tries to kill Fletch. That goes, look, defenseless babies. And the dog runs
around. I love the first scene when Stanwyck, Tim Matheson's character, when he brings Fletch to his house, he's like, I'll give you $1,000 to come with. He's like, this isn't gonna involve me like dressing up like Little Bo Peep or anything.
Nothing sexual, I assure you. I assure you.
But then when he brings him to the house or whatever, he brings him to the mansion, and Fletch just looks around. He's like, I'll be damned! I came this close to buying this house, and I found out Hopalong Cassidy killed himself here. Totally ruined it for me. It's like, Hopalong who? Cassidy. Bow and arrow. It was weird.
Really, really weird, yeah. That's a great moment, too, where Matheson insults Chevy, and then Chevy says something like...
don't talk to me that way, ass face. Ass I don't work face. For you
yet. I don't work for you yet. I love that. That's a great little moment of, like, you know, Fletch asserting himself. You're like, I don't work for you yet, ass face. And I love that, of course, he calls himself Ted Nugent. Yeah. And Stanwyck just buys it. He just calls him Mr. Nugent after that.
Yeah, he comes to the end when they have their face off. Yeah, which is.
And then later on, when the whole plot gets revealed, something occurred to me while I was in bed with your wife. And then Matheson's like, oh, and what was that? And Fletch is like, well, your wife said we were at roughly the same build from the waist up, I imagine.
Oh, it's so good. And even like the point of the, like, the. Stanwyck, Matheson, his whole pitch at the beginning is like, when it finally leads up to this whole thing, is like, would you do me this favor? Would you kill me? And Chevy Chase like takes like a long pause and just breathes like, sure.
Yeah.
Like, do him a favor. And it's just kind of, again, that's that point where it's like, that is not the appropriate response to this given situation. And that's like one of your first tells that it's like, this is a little bit left of center, this whole movie. So it's.
What do you think of the fantasy sequence, the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar bit? That's the only moment where I'm like, maybe a little too far in terms of the wacky. But it's a dream sequence, so it's okay.
I mean, it kind of plays into the director. Like, it's hard for, like, I mean, we love this movie, but it is kind of a hard movie to defend on the merits.
Yeah.
Because some aspects of it don't work. I don't think, like, the action sequences, the stuff with the police chase and, like, him when he's in, not the Friars Club, but something else like that, like the Elks Club, when he has to do that whole distraction. I don't think that scene is really funny. It doesn't really work. I think anytime the movie tries to be bigger than it should be is when it kind of comes crashing. So the fantasy with him playing with the Lakers, and they're like, he's 6'4", 6'8", with the afro.
Yeah, right. Hey, how about Fletch?
Yeah, how about Fletch? He's a Fletch drift, man. He's
just Fletch biting a player, like biting another player. He truly defines grace under pressure.
So it's funny, but it doesn't necessarily make the movie bigger or better. And it kind of reminds me, like, you mentioned, like, how when you were watching this movie, I actually saw Fletch Lives before I saw this one. But the thing is, there are so many things about Fletch Lives that I do love. And maybe it's just I grew up watching it. I saw it a lot. And it's just, it's sort of imparted itself onto my memory. So, I like Fletch Lives. It's even harder to defend on the merits, but that one has one of those weird moments where he actually breaks out into song and does like a zippity with animated animals. And again, that's one of those parts where it's like, stop. You needed to leave this one on the floor. And that's kind of the same thing with the Lakers thing. It doesn't ruin it, but it's kind of like, where is this coming from? It turns his, like, you know, just like love of like wearing Lakers jerseys and Lakers hats and stuff into something that doesn't help or fit the story.
Yeah. I mean, the movie is relatively, I'm doing air quotes, relatively plausible. And then when you get to that sequence, you're like, okay, we've entered into a whole other thing. And I'm even surprised at the end of the movie when it's Fletch and Gale and Alan Stanwyck and Chief Carlin are all at Stanwyck's house, Fletch gets Stanwyck killed. Mm-hmm. He gets it by saying, where he says, you know, where Carlin realizes that he was going to get double crossed by Stanwyck. And he's like, you know, you were going to be laying on some beach somewhere, counting my money. You were going to be laying on some beach somewhere while I'm in prison or something like that. And Chevy goes, yeah, and with your money. And that, mm-hmm. that makes Carlin get so mad that he shoots Stanwyck right in front of everybody, which is a fairly brutal scene. And poor Gail has to scream because she watches her husband just get shot down right in front of him. It's like,
right.
This is, as you mentioned, this is a fairly plausible noir detective story, mm-hmm. except for that one moment of Chevy as the, you know, that's the only part where it stretches to me just a little bit beyond. But it's okay. It's fine.
Yeah. And the thing about that ending, I mean, there are things that I like about it and things that I don't. It seems like Chevy's got it, or Fletch has got it, like, worked out. He's, like, deciphered everything so that when Matheson pulls the gun on him, he's basically got him. But he really doesn't anticipate what happens if Stanwyck just decides to shoot him and run for it. Like, he'll be a fugitive, but he
says the letter, though. He does say there's going to be a letter that's going to be delivered to my newspaper if I don't return. I mean, he'd still be dead.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing. Like, Stanwyck's still like, I can race to the airport and get there before the cops do or something
that's
like that.
That's true, yeah.
And then when Carlin, like, Chevy's like, there, you know, there are other people. Like, when Carlin shows up, when the chief shows up, like, Fletch has no plan for that, and he basically has to improv and ad-lib it. And I think that's why he gets them to turn their guns on each other, because he can't fight both of them, and it turns out he can't fight either. That's one of the things I do like, is Carlin starts beating the hell out of him, and it's actually Gail who knocks out the chief with her tennis racket.
That's right.
She's the one who actually saves his ass, because Chevy, or Fletch was a dead man. He was just going to get pummeled to death. So,
yeah, you don't want to get into a fight with Joe Don Baker, because he's.
Yeah, really,
I love that Fletch cannot help himself, where he's in the office, he's in Carlin's office, and he actually kind of gets away with everything. He gets dragged in by those two goons. I love he's once you two guys go down to the gym and pump each other, and then he's there, and he kind of gets away. He sort of talks his way out of it, out of being in trouble with Carlin, and then he's like, he sees the picture, and he's like, hey, is that you and Tommy Lasorda? Yeah, I hate Tommy Lasorda. Bam! And then he smashes it. And that's what gets him put in jail. I love that Fletch just can't help himself. Like, in some moments. Like, he just, you know, like, most of us would just be like, I'm lucky to get out of here. But Fletch just is like, no, I have to tweak this guy a little
bit. And, like, moments like that, like, I mean, when the chief actually puts him in the cell and holds a gun on him and is basically saying, I'll shoot you, stab myself in the arm, put the knife in your hand. It's like, okay, like... It, like, that seems like a plausible thing. When you've got a crooked chief of police in a dark noir tale, that would be a plausible moment. Does it work in a movie that is this lighthearted and silly? Mm-hmm. That moment really does kind of change the tone for a minute. So it's still a good scene because, you know, Joe Don Baker is scary as hell.
Yep.
But... again, it's just one of those things that you just have to roll with it. Like, if I was a critic who was trying to harshly scrutinize this thing, I was like, I might say that irrevocably changes the tone of the movie and doesn't really fit. Right. So, I don't know.
I can see if you're a critic that you would watch this and be like, this movie doesn't work. I totally get it, but I just think it is a movie meant to hit a certain audience, and it rings that audience's bell. And the first time I can think of ever in Fletch in pop culture where I thought I was the only person that liked Fletch, because mm-hmm. I didn't, you know what I mean? Like, it was part of my, like, Blues Brothers, Animal House kind of, you know, axiom there of, like, those Saturday Night Live veterans that did these movies, Ghostbusters, you know, it was that part of it. It was like, mm-hmm. those movies mm-hmm. are all just one big group to me. And then of all movies, I think it was in Mallrats, where Jason Lee talks about that he's broken up with his girlfriend and he needs to get his stuff back from her. And he's like, you have my copy of Marvel 2-in-1 number 37, my something something, and my VHS copy of Fletch. And I was like, oh my God, someone else is mentioning Fletch. Like, I had no idea that there had been a fandom that had built up around it. I mean, I knew that the movie had been successful enough to make a sequel, obviously, because they made one. But I, you know, pre-internet, I didn't really know anybody that liked Fletch the way I did. And so to hear a movie character talk about it was just, like, so exciting.
Well, I also think, I mean, it's hard to like Chevy Chase today, and that has probably been the case for a decade or more. So I think most people, if they're going to, they'll remember him fondly for Caddyshack and early Saturday Night Live.
Right.
And most people probably just want to confine it to that. But yeah, he was still, this was him playing in his wheelhouse. I hadn't heard it, but it really doesn't surprise me to hear that this is his favorite thing, because this is him being him. I mean, this is probably not really acting much at all, which, again, does that Is that part of the reason why it doesn't feel like he's in the moment? Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, the one scene of you mentioned the scene at the like the Elks Club thing. The one reason I do like that moment is because again it's got a reference to Animal House, because the guy that they're honoring is Fred the Dwarf Dorfman, who of course was Kent's brother in Animal House. So there's the little connection. But I actually kind of like Chevy's whole speech there about where he to keep the cops from that. Yeah. That moment doesn't really work where it's the hug a cop, but the whole thing where he gives the impromptu speech and he starts talking about Fred, talks about some sexual disease that Fred had. Mm-hmm. And he's like, your face has come back to normal and the drooling has stopped. And you actually hear people in the audience starting to titter a little because they know this is a gag. And then of course, Fred's wife, Marge, who, those weeks she spent at Trembling Hills, she really
Oh, and when he's picked up by the cops before they take him into the chief's office, they're like, we'll introduce you to the chief. He'll love you. He's like, yeah, I hear he's really mellowed out since he came out of the closet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's, it's funny. You watch these movies now that feature jokes that totally worked then, and now they really would not pass muster.
Yeah.
Chevy, Fletch makes a couple of gay jokes. They're not really homophobic jokes, but they're a little bit that. I mean, when he calls the cops, why don't you do guys who then pump each other, that's not so much a gay joke as it is he knows they'll find that offensive.
Right.
And that's what he's just trying to piss them off. But like the joke where, like you mentioned, where he's talking to Gina Davis from a payphone or something, and he says, I love your body, Larry. And there's a guy in the background like, and that's clearly meant to be a guy saying that to another guy. That's crazy. And now, exactly. Like, that's not even a joke now. Like, that would not be anything.
And when the chief said, when the chief asked him, he's like, why are you doing this? And he says, I like men. I like to be manhandled.
Yeah, there you go. Right, yeah. I mean, it's amazing how, in not too long a time, like, jokes that not only would not pass muster would not even be a joke now. It would. Mm-hmm. I think maybe if a younger person watched this movie, they would not even understand. That wouldn't even register that it was a joke. I don't get what that's funny about that. But speaking of, younger people, I mean, there, of course, have been numerous attempts to remake Fletch or to do a sequel to Fletch. And there was a point where Jason Lee was going to do it. Thank God we didn't get that. And Zach Braff going to do it at one point. And no one seems to be able to quite crack redoing Fletch.
Well, again, I think it's, why do you want to? And it's like, I'm worried that the approach to it would be wrong. Like, they would try to make it this raucous comedy and they would get a bunch of comedians
like
in it.
Judd Apatow thing, right.
Right. But that's not what the movie was. The movie was funny just because of Chevy Chase's smart aleck asides that you could take out of the movie. And like I said, it's just a straightforward murder mystery, like crime noir type of thing. Sort of like the way, and I remember back when you had the Ghostbusters episode of Film and Water with Nathaniel Wayne, he was arguing that if you took out Bill Murray's jokes in the original Ghostbusters, it's not a comedy. It's just a supernatural thriller. But the new Ghostbusters, the remake that they just did, tried to force comedy, tried to make it a fun. And I think that tone really, I don't know if that always worked that much in the new one. So I would worry that they would be trying to do the same thing with this one. Like, they would get a comedian. Like, I think the last time I heard they were talking about it, they were getting somebody like a Jason Sudeikis who could do it. I mean, he would be fine, but it would just be like, nobody else is like Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
So you can't try and ape the same type of performance. But as I have been saying for a half an hour now, that's the whole point. Like, it's just a vehicle for him in an otherwise paint-by-numbers story. So if you're not redoing him, what is the point? What are you trying to do? I mean, if they were just trying to do something more like the novels and just trying to, like, make a franchise about this slightly comedic, mystery series, maybe something like that would work. If they just went away from making it reverential to the original, that might be better.
I was wrecking my brain a little, but who, like, I like Jason Sudeikis just fine, but I don't see him as having a definable movie persona that really would work as him as Fletch. The only name that I even remotely landed on, and I'm not saying I'd want to see it, but is, of all people, Tina Fey. Mm-hmm. Like, Tina Fey kind of goes into these movies where she is sort of smarter than everybody else and has these little asides that are meant to be kind of just for her own amusement. And so I could sort of see Tina Fey as a sort of female Fletch. But really, there's no the only point of remaking this movie is because it's an IP that somebody, yeah, that somebody owns, and they want a way to do it. I mean, the book Fletch 2, which is it's not Fletch number 2, it's Fletch, T-O-O, is mm-hmm. about Fletch's son. Mm-hmm. And it features Fletch. And if they had gotten to that one while Chevy was still young, I think that could have worked, because I actually think that's my favorite, or one of my favorite of the Fletch books. And it's got a terrific ending moment. I won't say what it is in case anybody ever reads it, but it's got a great final, like literally final, like two sentences of the book. Mm. And unfortunately, Chevy now has just gotten to, he looks horrible. Like he's just too old and to, you know, plausibly be Fletch anymore. Right. He's not somebody who could, you would buy, would be running around getting into scrapes and jumping over fences and things like that. I mean, on some level, the older Fletch has to do some physical stuff.
I don't even know, like a name or a face that just kind of popped into my mind, and I don't know if this would work or not, but Chevy Chase's Community co-star Joel McHale, who really doesn't do a lot of acting other than that show, like his part in that show, maybe I could sort of see being a Fletch type.
Yeah, I see that.
If they cast him, I would say, okay, you've got my interest. I'll give it a shot. I'm not campaigning for that or anything. Yeah. Again, like, I mean, probably, and I think I would have got there eventually, but I probably would have said somebody like you said, like Tina Fey, like just go against the gender type and try something else, because otherwise somebody like a Steve Carell or somebody else from that kind of mold, I don't know.
Part of the thing, too, is that Fletch uses names for his fake identities that are real names, and they are just, not to overthink Fletch, but you know that's why we're here, is like he uses names that are real or at least exist in the culture, and mm-hmm. they strike a memory chord in the person who he is trying to fool just enough that they sound plausible. That's why he says G. Gordon Liddy or Don Corleone, or I'm blanking on all the other ones that he uses. But, like, he doesn't really use – or Harry S. Truman. For the most part, other than John Cocteau, he doesn't really use fake names. And it's like in this day and age where everybody has a cell phone, that doesn't work. Because, like, right. You hear G. Gordon Liddy, you're like, how do I know that name? And you go click, click, click.
Okay. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it would ruin the joke. I mean, when he pretends to be the airline mechanic – I mean, that I love that whole bit, because that guy is kind of onto him a little, where he says, you know, take a look at the Setzer valve, and he's, you know, and he goes, walks up to the front of the plane, and he goes,
opens the luggage compartment.
Gordo, back here. I know, I'm just looking at the luggage, you know, and then he does the whole bit about the, you know, somebody's got to clean these windows. There's a tremendous amount of filth and gook all over these things. And then the whole bit about, and I use this to this day about, you know, I'm going to need some pliers, some ball bearings. Hey, what the hell do you need ball bearings for? Oh, come on, guys. Maybe you need a refresher course. It's all ball bearings nowadays. Fletch is just plausible enough to get away with these things. And I think that's what makes it work. And in 2017, that just doesn't. That just doesn't fly.
Right. Well, again, that's plausible in 1985. Mm-hmm. In 2017, you could not walk into an air hangar.
Well, there's that too,
around pilots and mechanics and start bullshitting. You would be arrested like that.
Yeah, there's so much more security now. You can't get into offices. You can't get into hospitals just saying you're Dr. Rosen, and people buy it. Yeah, so. Yeah. I said I can't argue that this is a great movie, but it's a great movie. Because it's a movie that I do not get tired of watching. It's one that is on that website, Listen to a Movie, which I've talked about, where it's just audio files. And it's a great movie to listen to, because it's all just verbal, other than a couple of physical bits, you know, where Chevy, like, gets away at the end, where he defeats Carlin by throwing the thing in the fireplace, and he causes that whole thing. But for the most part, it's just great. Oh, and we should mention the score, the Harold Faltermeyer score.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Harold Faltermeyer, talk about a guy who had a moment. You know, like a guy that composed a couple of amazing themes and then, like, kind of just disappeared. But the Fletch theme, the dee, 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 like, that's Fletch. I mean, that's just totally Fletch.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, it's really good. The score transcends kind of the movie. I love it. I, like, not quite to the level of the Axel Foley theme from Beverly Hills Cop. But it's still up there in terms of my memory. And I would say for the people listening, watch Fletch. Yeah, is it great? That depends a lot on your mileage. Right. I think it's great, but it's hard to defend. I would say give Fletch Lives a chance. If for nothing else, he does come up with a lot more crazy names. He introduces himself as Claude Henry Smoot. He calls himself Peter Lemon Jello. And at one point, he goes to a party on this Louisiana plantation, dressed as a Confederate colonel or general or something, and he has to BS his way on the list, and he calls himself Bobby Lee, and he just keep on repeating that, so that the guy keeps writing down Bobby Lee, and then at the end he just says Schwartz.
I would argue, I remember going to see Fletch Lives in the theater. I was so excited, and then just being so crushed, because it was so, first of all, it's based on an original screenplay. It's not any one of the books, which makes no bloody sense to me. Why, when you have 8 other books to adapt, you would write your own storyline? And I just remember thinking, it just did not. And I know that all the movies do this because it's the James Bond thing, but I hated that Gale's not in the movie. He's got a new romantic love interest. I never like that. I like that he sticks with the girl, but instead it's Julianne Phillips is the main romantic lead, and Gina Davis is not in Fletch Lives, which is because by then she was kind of a big star.
Right.
Although it is worth mentioning, I think, just as a slightly, a little nod to Fletch, and I could be imagining it, Gina Davis did a movie in 1992 called Hero, where she plays a reporter, and her boss is Chevy Chase in that movie, and he only has one scene, and he's not credited. But he's in the movie, and I always wondered if that was just a little nod to Fletch, because I'm like, why is Chevy Chase in this movie? Because it's her and Dustin Hoffman and Andy Garcia.
And Andy Garcia, yeah.
But Chevy's in there, and he doesn't. He's
completely
not
forgot about that.
Yeah. So I remember seeing that movie in the theater and being, oh wow, Chevy's in this movie. I always think that was a little nod. So if you're dying for more Chevy Chase's Fletch, I would say give yourself to Fletch Lives, because it is literally more Fletch, but I can't argue that. Yeah, I can't argue that either one of these movies are particularly great movies. The way I would say Blues Brothers, I think Blues Brothers is objectively a great movie. Animal House, Ghostbusters. Fletch is kind of like Beverly Hills Cop, what we just mentioned, in that the reason you watch it is for the main performance. Because Beverly Hills Cop is another movie that's kind of a dry cop thriller.
It was
it was originally meant to be a Stallone movie.
It was going to be a Sylvester Stallone Cobra type of just action movie. And they, the producers were fighting with the studio and who they got. Right. But, I know. And the one thing that I did just think about with Fletch Lives, again, we're turning this into a Fletch Lives show.
we're never covering Fletch Lives on the show. So
yeah, you're never going to cover that on its own.
Let's give Fletch Lives
a
chance. Yeah.
But the way Fletch kind of teeters on some gay jokes that today might be kind of questionable, Fletch Lives really does that with a lot of racial jokes.
Oh, right. There's all the plantation stuff. Right? Yeah. With Cleveland Little's in that movie, too.
Cleveland Little has calculus. It's a cow. But the whole thing, when he's at, a restaurant with Cal, and one of the other just southern redneck guys just walks over, and he's like, you want to go on a coon hunt? And Fletch just looks at Cal with his big wide eyes, and the guy just smiles oh man, what is this? But it's
that's so close. And it even had Michael Ritchie even did that one too, so close. But yeah, and in my mind, in my Fletch canon, he went on and he stayed on with Gale, because of course the movie ends with him on vacation.
Mansplaining
basketball. He's like, why do they have to dribble the ball? Doesn't that seem a little childish? Well, if they don't dribble the ball, then they get called. Then they call for traveling. Traveling. Oh, and he's like, of course, Gale and we had our own version of one-on-one in the bedroom, and Gale thought I was the bravest man on earth, which of course I am.
Yeah.
And then of course the final sting is the whole bit about I charged the whole vacation to Ted Underhill's credit card. Want the number? Boom! And then there's the song, the bit by bit song. Another little dig at Ted Underhill, which is richly deserved. So, like I said, we just love Fletch. You and I just had so much fun just sitting there, just shooting stupid Fletch lines back and forth. And that's, it's the perfect movie to see when you're 13 or 14. I'm guessing, you obviously didn't see it in the theater because you were just a baby back then. So when did you see it? Did you saw it on cable or something?
Yeah, I think I probably would have made the effort to rent it when I was a teenager. But again, seeing, like, we had Fletch Lives for some reason. It was on one of our, like, my dad and my older brother used to make these, like mixtapes of VHS copies.
Sure.
We would get those six-hour blank tapes and record three movies onto it. So Fletch Lives was on with two other movies. I don't know what combination. But yeah, I would just watch that one. So at some point I was like, I know this is a sequel. I've never seen the first one. I probably should. So I think I just went out and rented the first one. And that's when like the joke about his ex-wife and the ex-wife's lawyer and everything started making sense. I was like, oh, okay. I kind of get this more now. So yeah.
I wish they would, so far it's, I don't even think Fletch is on Blu-ray yet. And I wish they would, there must be some deleted scenes. I would wish that they would do something like get Michael Ritchie to do a commentary. Mm-hmm. Like they've, for a film that clearly is an important movie for the studio because they keep, they put it out on DVD. They put like a special edition. I forget what they called it, but it had very few special features. Like they've kind of done it on the cheap.
Yeah.
And although of course it's too late to get Michael Ritchie doing commentary because he's passed away, but Chevy's still around and Gina Davis is still around, and you know I would love to have a nice deluxe version of just to hear more about it. And one last factoid that we want to mention that I want to get in: Gregory MacDonald, the author of the Fletch novels, he had casting approval, and they originally pitched to him, and both these people were turned down. Burt Reynolds, which okay. You know, Burt Reynolds was a huge star.
Sure, yeah.
He got I'm sure he got put up for every. He got put up for Superman for Pete's sakes, you know. So, but MacDonald turned him down, and Mick Jagger. What? Like, huh? Like, I don't you know that one. And apparently, of course, MacDonald was like, "No, I don't want Mick Jagger." And when they pitched Chevy Chase, he apparently went for Chevy immediately, even though. He had never even seen any movie Chevy had done. I guess he was just familiar with Chevy enough, and he approved him. And then the other story that I read was that MacDonald read the script. He didn't like that they made so many changes to the book. And Michael Ritchie took him out to dinner and, according to MacDonald, explained to me point by point how I was wrong in every single way. And apparently went, you know, it was like, okay, fine, go make your movie. And, you know, MacDonald apparently was happy with the movie after that because I'm sure it helped sell books. After that was that it became, you know, a thing. I mean, I don't think most people remember the Fletch books outside of the fact that they are the books from this movie.
Hmm.
It's Fletch. It's wonderful. It's just fun. It's one of the most quotable movies. So glad we got a chance to do this, Ryan. Thank you so much for coming on. Now that you and I have met and we've shared a living, was it disappointing? Did I not live up to your expectations? You can tell me.
You met my expectations. No one...
But I did not exceed them.
No, I mean, you know. Well, I mean, but they were lofty expectations. So.
All right, fair enough. I will say you exceeded my expectations, Ryan. I'm going to be the bigger man here and say you.
Well, I told you I have it on my business card, Ryan. I'm less impressive in person daily.
All righty. Well, where can people find you on the network?
The same place they can find you. I'm on the network, Fire and Water Podcast Network. A number of shows, Batman Nightcast, Give Me Those Star Wars, Midnight the Podcasting Hour, Power of Fishnets. I guest on just about everything that I can for the time being. And it's for the time being is the big operative word. So, but this is good. And hopefully I do look forward to at some point, hopefully we can do Beverly Hills Cop and Animal House.
Animal House.
Animal House, that's going to have to be a quote fest. Animal House is going to be a round table. You got to get like five people on that.
Yeah,
one.
I think you're right. Yeah, oh my God, that movie. Oh, that's so good. So anyway, yeah, if you haven't seen Fletch, go see Fletch. Go find Fletch. It's super funny. So Ryan, thank you so much for coming on. I always appreciate it. And thanks everybody for listening. And I guess we will until next week. We'll see you later. What's my? Oh, I completely forgot my catchphrase for my show. Okay. Until next week.
Good night and good luck.
Good night and good luck. Yeah, there you go. Anyway, until next week, that's a wrap.
Here, let me take a crack at this Fetzer here.
Gord.
Yeah, I know where it is. I'm just getting a bird's eye view here and,
What do you think? It's the bypass line, right?
I think it's the bypass line, yeah. I'm gonna need some pliers and, a set of 30-weight ball bearings.
What?
Yeah, tell you what, I gotta go to my truck. Fred gets here before I'm back. You can tell him to start without me.
The hell you need ball bearings for?
Oh, come on, guys. It's so simple. Maybe you need a refresher course. Hey, it's all ball bearings nowadays.
Now, you prepare that Fetzer valve with some 3-in-1 oil and some gauze pads. And I'm going to need about 10 quarts of antifreeze, preferably Prestone. No. I'll make that Quaker State. Wash those windows. They've got filth muck on them.